we're on our second speaker of this afternoon, speaking on the impact of abuse history on adolescent African American females, current HIV and STD associated behaviors, and the psychosocial mediators of HIV STD risk. Today we have speaking with us Jennifer Brown. Jennifer is a postdoctoral fellow in the Department of Behavioral Sciences and Health Promotion in the Rollins School of Public Health at Emory University. Under the mentorship of Dr. Ralph DeClemente, she received her master's and doctoral degrees in the clinical psychology from Syracuse University under the mentorship of Drs. Peter Vannable and Michael Carey. Her research focuses on evaluating the efficacy of health promotion interventions to reduce HIV and STDs and sexual risk behaviors among high-risk populations, and to improve the health of individuals living with HIV. Dr. Brown is particularly interested in evaluating the acceptability, feasibility, and efficacy of technologically delivered health promotion interventions. In addition to her role as a clinical health psychologist, Dr. Brown provides psychological services to HIV-infected individuals in the metro Atlanta area through Emory University's Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences. So she's busy. she's going to speak to us. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Well, I'm presenting on behalf of April Young, who unfortunately could not be with us. And April is the lead author on this presentation. And I want to acknowledge our colleagues at Emory, including Drs. Ralph DeClemente, Dr. Sales, Eve Rose, and also Dr. Gina Wingood. I have no disclosures to make other than to acknowledge our funding sources. This is part of the baseline data from a larger parent study that was funded by NIMH to Ralph DeClemente, along with additional support from the Center for AIDS Research and individual funding for Dr. Sales and for myself. So a bit of background to get us started. First of all, the association between sexual, physical, and psychological abuse and adverse sexual health outcomes has been well documented in the literature. Indeed, associations have been found between sexual and or physical abuse history and heightened risk for STIs and other adverse sexual health outcomes. However, few studies have examined abuse from a broader perspective, looking at sexual, physical, and emotional abuse collectively in their association with sexual health outcomes. And while we know that there's an association between abuse history and negative sexual health outcomes, the mechanism by which this association occurs is unclear. Generally, women with a history of abuse are less likely to use condoms, placing them at higher risk for STIs and HIV. But the association is not always consistent across studies, and in large part has been examined among adult samples. And so a number of potential pathways have been proposed in the literature, including fear of retaliatory violence when negotiating for condom use, or negative partner reaction during condom negotiation. In addition, young women may also have lower self-efficacy or confidence that they can successfully refuse sex if it's going to be an unprotected sexual encounter. And overall, the young women may also just have generally lower levels of lessened control in their relationships, putting them at a disadvantage to successfully negotiate for condom use. So the purpose of the current study was to explore both the independent and joint mediating roles of fear of condom negotiation, relationship power, and refusal self-efficacy, and the association of history of abuse and condom use among African-American young women. I'll tell you a little bit about the larger parent study. This is, again, reporting on the baseline data. This is data from Project AFIA, which is a longitudinal study of African-American females who were randomized to one of two sexual risk reduction intervention conditions. At recruitment, they were between the ages of 14 and 20 years old. To be part of the larger parent study, you needed to report unprotected vaginal intercourse at least once in the past 6 months. Participants were drawn from three sexual health clinics in the Atlanta metro area. We had a public health clinic, a Planned Parenthood clinic, along with a hospital-based sexual health clinic. Exclusion criteria included being married, pregnant, or attempting to become pregnant. And of the eligible women that were screened, 94%, or 701 women, completed the baseline assessment. The baseline data were collected using audio computer-assisted self-interviews, ACASI. Young women also provided self-collected vaginal swab specimens, which were assayed for three STIs, chlamydia, gonorrhea, and trichomonas. This data, as I mentioned, will only be reporting on the baseline data. And for the purpose of the analyses, we were interested more in the history of abuse rather than young women who are experiencing current abuse. So young women who reported abuse histories occurring in the past 90 days were excluded from the analyses. So we're looking more at abuse that occurred earlier in life than current experiences of abuse. A bit about our measures. Our key dependent variable of interest was use of a condom during all vaginal intercourse encounters in the past 90 days, and that's how consistent condom use was defined. History of abuse. You'll see these questions are fairly broad, but asked young women, have you ever been emotionally, physically, or sexually abused? And then we analyzed this both independently and as a composite dichotomous variable, so any history of one of the forms of abuse. I'll speak a bit more about that as we go along. The key mediators we examined. The first was fear of condom negotiation, which is an 8-item scale with 5-point Likert responses. We also examined relationship power as a potential mediator in the association between abuse history and consistent condom use, along with refusal self-efficacy. So their perceived ability and confidence to refuse unwanted sexual encounters. We also assessed key demographics, including education, employment status, income, and age, along with lifetime use of marijuana, alcohol, or ecstasy. And then we additionally assessed lifetime number of sexual partners and self-reported history of STI infection prior to enrollment in the FIA study. A bit about the analysis that I'll be talking about. As I mentioned, women, 108 women who were currently experiencing abuse in the past 90 days, and those that did not have sexual intercourse in the past 90 days were excluded from the analysis. We'll be presenting bivariate analyses, along with single and multiple mediator pathways that were examined using the indirect macro for SPSS. So again, the larger parent study enrolled 701 participants, but we're going to be focusing on the 593 participants who weren't experiencing current abuse or those that reported no recent sexual activity. Oops. The average age of our participants was 17 years old, with a range between 14 and 21. 30% had already graduated high school and 35% were unemployed. 82% of these young women had reported an occasion of unprotected sex in the past 90 days. 53% reported that prior to enrolling in our study, they had one or more previous STI infections. And 58% of the women had a history of any form of abuse. And so this slide presents the different forms of abuse that we assessed and the overlapping patterns. And I'll point out a few things. First, if we look at the top category, about a quarter of our sample reported that they had only experienced emotional abuse, which could have been a broad range of emotional abusive experiences. And then when we look at emotional and physical abuse, 31% had experienced those two forms of abuse. And then another, about a quarter, had experienced all three forms of abuse, at least at one point in their lives. The age at first of use did not differ among the forms of abuse. On average, young women first experienced emotional, physical, or sexual abuse when they were about 13 years old. And there is no variation about this. Again, this is a fairly general measure, so it could have spanned their whole lifetime. But young women were reporting that primarily the abuse was occurring in their early teenage years. So women with a history of abuse, they didn't differ demographically from young women who had not experienced a form of abuse. They did, however, report more lifetime sexual partners, more often reported a lifetime history of drug use, either alcohol, marijuana, or ecstasy use at one point in their lives, and more often reported a history of a past STI. Consistent condom use was significantly lower among women with a history of abuse, whereas 15% of women with a history of abuse reported consistent condom use, compared to 25% of young women without a history of abuse. Condom use, however, did not differ from, were no different from each other based on the form of abuse as far as consistent condom use. And women who had experienced both emotional and physical abuse were less likely to use condoms consistently compared to those with no history of abuse and compared to women who had experienced emotional or physical abuse. When we look at the association between women with a history of abuse and those three key mediators, we see that across the board, women with abuse histories reported lower levels of relationship power, less sex refusal self-efficacy, and more fears of condom negotiation. These next slides are going to present both single and multiple mediator models, looking at the association between abuse history and each of our three key mediators, with our key outcome being consistent condom use. So first, three single mediator models were estimated, and the first looked at the history of abuse with relationship power as the key mediator and its association with condom use. The second examined history of abuse with fear of condom negotiation as the key mediator. And the third examined refusal self-efficacy as a single mediator in the association with consistent condom use. And across all of these three single mediator models, we found no significant association, no mediating role between relationship power, fear of condom negotiation, and refusal self-efficacy. So these next models are going to test the joint association. So it very well may be that young women who have a fear of condom negotiation may also have difficulties refusing sexual experiences that are unwanted. So these next series of slides will present the multiple mediator analyses. And this first slide examines the joint mediating role of fear of condom negotiation and refusal self-efficacy on consistent condom use. And so when we look here again at the multiple mediator models, we find again no significant effects of a joint association between fear of condom negotiation and refusal self-efficacy. Similarly, when we look at fear of condom negotiation combined with power in relationships, we see again no multiple mediating association between history of abuse and consistent condom use. And again, this last slide, when we look at refusal self-efficacy and power in relationships, we see no association, no mediating role of history of abuse and consistent condom use. The last model tested the multiple mediating role of all three of the key mediators, fear of condom negotiation, power in relationships, refusal self-efficacy, and their impact on consistent condom use. And again, we're seeing a similar trend. There are no significant associations when you put all three of the mediating factors into the model. So some summary and conclusions and directions for our future research. The association between abuse history and condom use was not mediated either in the single mediating models or the multiple mediating models by relationship power, refusal self-efficacy, or fear of condom negotiation, both independently or in combination. But I think this presentation and study raises a lot more questions. And so we're really interested to consider other potential mediators that could be defining this association. Because, again, we did see consistent associations with abuse history and inconsistent condom use. And so perhaps other psychological factors such as depression, PTSD, trauma, may be potential mediators, along with young women's desire to become pregnant, so in turn reducing their condom use, desire to be more intimate with their partner, if that's associated with condom use, along with perhaps elevating the partner's desires for unprotected sexual encounters. But it's important to note that abuse history retained or neared statistical significance in its association with condom use in each of the mediator models. So even though the mediators were not significant, abuse history still remains significant as a significant predictor of condom use. And so to summarize, women with a history of abuse reported less consistent condom use, lower levels of relation power and refusals of efficacy, and more fears associated with negotiating for condom use. Experiencing one type of abuse in isolation was not associated with decreased condom use, but women with a history of both emotional and physical abuse, or emotional, physical, and sexual abuse, had significantly less condom use. Some limitations of the study. First of all, this was self-report cross-sectional data, so we can't infer causality. Our relationship power scale also had fairly low internal inter-item reliability. And there are a number of unmeasured factors with our abuse scale. This was a fairly broad question, so we have no sense as to whether the duration or frequency of abuse, the time that elapsed since the last episode of abuse, were there partner-related factors, who was the perpetrator of the abuse, and also this was a convenient sample recruited from 3 sexual health clinics. And also keep in mind that to participate in the larger parent study, you had to report at least one occasion of unprotected vaginal sex. So these were young women that perhaps were slightly riskier group than you would see across a more broad sexual health clinic setting. Some implications. Assessment of history or ongoing abuse during STI treatment and behavioral intervention. Perhaps this is a unique opportunity to do some screening in sexual health clinics on abuse, both sexual abuse, but also other forms of abuse, including physical and emotional abuse, and help young women connect with appropriate treatment services, so perhaps appropriate referrals to mental health services to address PTSD symptoms or depressive symptoms. And it also highlights the importance of addressing abuse and behavioral interventions. And so some of our current work at Emory is looking on addressing these relationship components, particularly among young women who may have difficulties in their relationships. Due to abuse histories.